Hello, everyone, and welcome to NWR Connectivity episode 382. I'm your host, John Reardon, and I am joined, as often, by Neil Ronahan.
Hello. We're here to talk sports. John is a big sports head now.
I've been sportsing all up and down the streets.
I mean, I've been sportsing, too, since last... I think it was around... Yeah, when we last recorded was when... I was away for the weekend, basically F-Zero 99 and that Nintendo Direct happened, and then I immediately absconded and was not really around the internet after playing like a race in F-Zero 99. Mm-hmm. And I listened to two jackasses talk about F-Zero on YouTube and disagreed with her. Yeah. But like I did kind of like initially, I was like, oh, this is okay. I don't think it's going to last. I have essentially played F-Zero 99 every day since we last recorded a week ago. I've put a couple hours into it, done a couple Grand Prix and stuff like that. This game rocks. Like,
yeah,
I am very surprised at how like this might be the 99 game that sticks with me a lot longer. Like I had a lot of fun with Pac-Man and Tetris and Mario and stuff like that, but all of those faded. F-Zero 99
of them
so
faded
far,
right off of the eShop and off of your Switch.
Yeah. Like, I'd say, like, Mario 35 I didn't truly appreciate until I saw Justin Berube be an absolute madman during that, like, death stream that we did.
Yeah.
Which was, like, a lot of too little, too late. And Tetris 99, as we started recording, I don't know if you saw it, there's going to be a Xenoblade 3, like, skin. So there's, like, a Tetris 99 event for that. Like, they're still, that's what, 4 or 5 years of Tetris 99? Like, that's been lasting. I haven't opened that up in, like, 4 years.
The thing I'll give Tetris 99 that I appreciate is that that one got a physical release.
Yeah.
Which I'd very much like to see for F-Zero.
Content.
Yeah.
And Pac-Man too. Like,
did Pac-Man get a physical? I know it had a, I guess it had, it has a digital release. You can buy it.
But I don't think you can buy it anymore.
Oh, can you not? Okay.
I think you had to buy it before it went offline.
Is Pac-Man 99 not online anymore?
Yeah, they took it off.
Oh, geez, I missed it. I guess I wasn't paying attention because I didn't like Pac-Man 99.
Because we had, I think we like played it a couple times and like won.
Pac-Man 99 was the easiest one to cheat. Like it was the first, I'm pretty sure we have an episode of Connectivity where it's like, yep, we won.
But here's the thing, and like, I do think that Tetris 99 and Mario 35 both did a good job of the game was fun to play even if you weren't winning.
And
I think, and like Tetris 99, I think like if you just like you had to at least progress, but like I think I won a couple Tetris 99s over the years. Mm-hmm. Mario 35, I might have won one, I forget. But that's always an important thing with a battle royale. It's something about Fortnite that what my like month of my life when I played it a lot was that like, oh no, it's just fun going through the exercise of playing this game. And that's what F-Zero 99 nails so perfectly is that. I've gotten eighth like twice and it feels honestly dumb luck. I don't think there's anything I'm doing that I deserve to be in eighth place. I think I just happened to be with like a pool of people who fucked up more than me. That's it.
I still haven't won F-Zero and I haven't been playing it super religiously, but I did have, and I posted a video on Twitter. The closest I've ever come, I was in first. Someone came up from behind me and drove through me. Exploding my car, and so my car exploded across the finish line as that person won.
Did you survive?
No, I crashed out, so I didn't even place.
God.
Yeah, I went from first to not placing across the finish line, and I was like, God damn! I turned it off after that.
I would have. I've had a couple like that where I'm like, oh, I'm gonna nope.
Yeah,
like I think somebody nudged me like just in the wrong thing near the end when I was like fighting for a top five spot.
Yeah, I have been doing better. I use the Golden Fox, which I have since the Super Nintendo one. I've just stuck with that car the whole time.
The highly durable one.
It's very durable, but it's slow. I chose it as a child because it was yellow. And I like the color yellow, and I've just stuck with that color.
Mine is now tricked out as like green and pink or something.
Yeah.
With the hot decals.
Yeah. But I listened to Justin's advice, and when I'm using that car, just boost way more than I think is safe.
Yeah.
Because it has such good recovery on the recharge pads, which was good advice. And I've been doing better since doing that.
I think I'm getting them mixed up. Because there's two that are both kind of like in the middle. There's the one that's like a tank, and there's the one that recharges an insane amount while you're on the boost pad.
Golden Fox is Dr. Stewart's car, if you know your F-Zero cast. By default, it's yellow. It's not the whatever goose, which is like yellow and green.
Yeah, okay. The goose is what I've been using more of.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I've been bouncing between them. Like initially I was just like, I'm just gonna roll Blue Falcon. Mm-hmm. But I kind of like the specialization of either the one where you just boost a buttload, mm-hmm. or the one where it's like, I am a tank, I won't boost as much, but you guys ain't knocking me off the road.
Yeah, I lose to the one you're talking about a lot. That seems to be the match for the Golden Fox. But yeah, no, I appreciate, and I said this when I was talking to Alex about it a couple weeks ago, but I think the thing that really clicks with me for F-Zero 99 is that, like, it doesn't, like, every other 99 game has felt like they've tacked this Battle Royale thing onto an existing game.
Yeah.
Whereas F-Zero 99, it kind of just feels like you're playing F-Zero. Like,
yep.
It's just that somebody, and that's why, like, F-Zero 99 had been a game that, like, the weird thing about it is that, like, Nintendo didn't invent F-Zero 99. Like, we have all been talking about the concept of F-Zero 99 for years. And I don't know, like, if it was already in development when we started talking about it, or if Nintendo was like, that's a good idea, everybody on the internet. Because it's just such a, it's an instance of, like, everybody had the same idea at the same time. And I don't think there was ever a leak. It was just that everybody agreed that this would be cool. And I think Nintendo just went, yeah, it would. Let's do that.
Yeah. And the fact that it's made by NST, so, yes, you know, filthy Americans. I do think there's, it might not be, the idea might not have been like inspired by the world around Nintendo, mm-hmm. But the development team working on this is likely a development team that is more aware of what the chatter is online.
NST is one of those devs that we don't get to see, like, they're generally a support studio, right? So we don't get to see like their
We're going to open up Wikipedia on our podcast.
Do it.
Stop me if you've heard this one before.
That's what our podcast is about. Wikipedia and Xbox.
Yeah.
Xbox will come later.
But yeah, I mean, like, they are doing the Mario versus Donkey Kong remake.
I assumed that would be them because they did the original, right?
Yeah. 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 Or at least Wikipedia says this. I don't know if this is confirmed.
Okay.
But I mean, yeah, not gonna, it's coming for FAMA boards. I don't feel like investigating through this much, but usually that's a place that has decent, like, community sourcing.
I mean, once again, I'm pretty sure a couple weeks ago when me and Alex were talking about stuff, I think we guessed that was, like, we didn't know anything, but, like, that Mario versus Donkey Kong remake, A, it's one of their games anyway, and B, it just seems like the level of thing that, especially, like, it makes total sense, like, we're at the very end of the Switch's lifespan. It makes total sense for Nintendo to be like, hey, NST, could you fill out this library? Just like, you're not working on the next big Mario or Zelda or something. What do you got that you could just fill out our library with in the last year?
Here is their Switch, what they have worked on. Development support for three indie games, which I believe are part of the, Snipperclips, The Stretchers, and Good Job, which...
Snipperclips was, I mean, that was like a launch title. That makes sense.
But if there's something about Snipperclips, The Stretchers, and Good Job that stands out to me, and why I'm almost a little confused, is that I'm 90% sure all three of those developers are European. And I believe what I remember hearing is that it was kind of like NOE doing a lot of outreach. And those were like, I mean, Snipperclips and The Stretchers are both very much based around like the Joy-Con concept. In a way that games early on definitely went into, but the fact that these were worked in with Nintendo, like these were indies that Nintendo picked out, came up with a concept that they thought would further, you know, what Switch was going to be. So it's weird that NST supposedly did development support with them, because it always seemed like an NOE initiative that after, I mean, Snipperclips was a very big success, but The Stretchers and Good Job were both just farted out. Like The Stretchers like was like launched in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
No one cares.
Does NOE have like a regional dev studio?
No, okay. I don't think so. I mean, like, the what is it? I think there's a couple, but not like game makers, more like tech support.
Yeah. Mercury Steam. That's the the European branch of Nintendo.
Yeah. Like, I think NERD, but they don't make games. I think they've helped out with games.
Right. They do all their emulation stuff.
Yeah.
They're very good. Unsung heroes of emulation.
Definitely. But yeah, so those three indie games, the port work and new content for Captain Toad, which was a 3DS and Switch game. So like the new Odyssey stuff was them. They helped out with Bowser's Fury.
I remember that.
That was probably one of their more notable ones, because I think like that was one where it wasn't like they just refined the engine. Like, they collaborated with EPD Tokyo on that game. And I
mean, depending on how much of Bowser's Fury was NST, we should give NST more things to do.
Yes.
Like, I don't know how much was them, but like, if they contributed anywhere near like even 50%, give them more things, please. That game is amazing.
Yeah, it is very, very good. I would be surprised if NST did not show up as like a support studio for the next 3D Mario or the next game that EPD Tokyo works on.
No, it's just cool that like it's, you know, F-Zero 99 is the first thing that I've seen. I mean, even of all that stuff that you listed, that's the only thing on that list that's just them, right?
Yeah.
Like they weren't a support studio on F-Zero 99. It was their game.
Yeah. The only one that is not like support or port work, you'd have to go back to, or I guess like is an actual game, Mini Mario and Friends Amiibo Challenge. They made that.
I don't remember that existing.
Yeah, like I forget.
Was that a 3DS game?
It was a Wii U and a 3DS thing. I believe there was some kind of like you would scan amiibo and unlock different things. I think there were like a couple like Mini Mario puzzles that would unlock depending on the amiibos that you scan.
Yeah.
I'm not clicking into this. I'm just going off of that memory. I know I played it. That's I can say that. But All they really did was Mario vs. Donkey Kong games for a very long time. Dipping Stars, Minis on the Move, Miniland Mayhem, Minis March Again, some crosswords games, Aura Climber on DSiWare. But the one thing is that there was the dude who was like the Mario vs. Donkey Kong guy, Steven Mortimer. I believe he had like a Reset Era account or something. But he now works at Riot Games. He left Nintendo. He left NST. He left NST a very long time ago. Back in 2016.
That was probably just after Tipping Stars.
Yes. Yeah. I think he finished doing the Mini Mario and Friends was the last Nintendo game he worked on.
Okay.
I would not be surprised if he left because he was frustrated because all he was making is Mini Mario games. And look what they're doing now. F-Zero 99 and Mini Mario games.
Well, they're not. It's like Mario versus Donkey Kong, the first one, barely counts as a Mini Mario game because like that. Like, this is not like the later Mario vs. Donkey Kong games where they became bad Lemmings games. This is very different. It has mini Marios, but they're just a thing that you collect at the end of levels. So that doesn't count. But yeah, this studio is such a weird, like, kind of, I don't know, it almost feels like a little unknown quantity in Nintendo's back pocket. And it's always neat to see, like, what they actually can do on their own because we just never see it.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see what they add to it. I hope they do add like some kind of offline component. It seems like
I do too. I mean,
you have the practice stuff, but like that's not the same. But I know there was data mine about a roadmap and also potentially having some Satellaview stages.
Incredible. I only saw some of the reporting on the data mine stuff, but I saw like the Satellaview stuff, which is awesome because that's like a lot of that stuff isn't currently playable anywhere, even in emulation. We just have like screenshots of some of that stuff. And then also I saw somebody talking about like the Game Boy, like GP Legend stuff was a course that was referenced. So like that could be cool. I get why this is based on the 2D F-Zero games, but boy, do I wish we could have F-Zero X courses. Cause that's actually happened a lot playing this is I'll play like a few races of F-Zero 99 and go, that was fun, and then I'll flip over to the N64 NSO app and just play F-Zero X, because I love the original F-Zero, but like I don't feel like that franchise found its identity until F-Zero X.
I do think there is something to be said about the strategic simplicity of F-Zero on Super Nintendo that I think 99 does a good job of bringing out, because that was always a game where you're like, this is cool. There's not a lot to it. And F-Zero 99 adds a little bit more. I do agree. Like, F-Zero X is where, I mean, I don't think I played the Super Nintendo version until after I played F-Zero X, maybe. Mm-hmm. But like, F-Zero X is like, I've played that game and I was like, oh, this is important. This is very cool. This is doing things that, I mean, I did not own a PlayStation, so I did not play Wipeout, which is similar but different.
I will say, having played both of those, like, kind of near launch, Wipeout's fine. I don't get that one as much. Like, Wipeout's okay, but it's F-Zero is so much better.
Yeah. And, like, X-Cup. The hell of everybody falls off a right angle is beauty. I love that nonsense. And that is something that, like, maybe the evolution of this is let's go to N64 graphics.
It's kind of weird because like obviously, like, all the cars are sprites, but like it's not running in mode 7, right? It's a 3D engine. Yes, your cars are 2D. There's nothing really stopping you from putting an F-Zero X course in this. You'd have to work, like, I'm sure there'd be some new mechanics around getting like all the tunnel segments and whatnot to work, but like, it is, you're looking at a 3D model of the track. It's not actually 2D like it was on the Super Nintendo. So it's doable. F-Zero GX is probably too much to ask for, but hopefully we just get like a remaster of that one day or something.
Yeah.
Because replaying a bunch of that I replayed every Grand Prix in that for Bloodworth's Vintage Review.
Yeah.
My God, that is just one of the best GameCube games. Game is so good. I love that game so much. But yeah. F-Zero 99 is good.
Yes.
I've also played a game that starts with an F and features two numbers at the end. By the time this comes out, I think it'll be out. We got a review code for FC24, which is FIFA, but it's not FIFA legally.
Yeah.
But it's EA Sports.
Yeah. In case you do not pay attention to sports video games, FIFA or just sports in general, there's a lot of unethical, cheating, scumbag nonsense going on in FIFA. And a couple years ago, there were a lot of reports that like FIFA was demanding outrageous sums of money from EA for a like non-exclusive license to keep on using FIFA in video games. EA Sports at a certain point was like, you know what? We don't think our customers really care. So they started, this is the first year of non-FIFA, which is EA Sports FC, stands for Football Club, and we'll see what FIFA does. It really feels like an ESA Jeff Keighley situation. I know.
Yeah,
it maybe the underdog here is, no, you know what, it works perfectly, because at the end of the day they're just still both corporations,
right? It's still EA. yeah
but EA is Jeff Keighley in this regard, in that he's putting out Summer Games Fest that is basically E3 with the numbers filed off, and EA is putting out EA Sports FC, which is FIFA with the numbers filed off.
Well, with the letters filed off, they kept the numbers.
Yeah, I guess the letters filed. Yeah, they did keep the, still. We are both playing it, but you're the only person who has played it so far. What do you think?
Yeah, we just got the code today, and for anybody wondering why in the world is John playing the football game.
Football.
This one in particular is kind of interesting because, unlike all the, so with the FIFA games that came out on Switch, the first two were like roughly comparable.
Really,
with,
only the first one.
Yeah, like they kind of FIFA 19 made a cursory effort at least to kind of match some of the features, but none of them were ever like totally feature complete, as far as I understand. And none of them ever like ran in the same engine as the current versions of their time. They essentially were based on the 360 and PS3 version.
Yeah, more or less. Even the first FIFA on Switch, which I will stand by to a degree, that like it's a solid, fun, playable version of FIFA on the go. But it was already kind of built to fail because it was running on an engine that EA wasn't really using anymore. Yeah. And more importantly, what like big boy Super HD FIFA was using. Now they are on the same engine for EA Sports FC.
Yes. So this is the for and even like since 19, I believe FIFA on Switch had formerly been like Legacy Edition, which is where it's not a current version of the game. They just update the roster. So this is really the first time that on Switch they're trying to make this feature complete with the Xbox Series X and PS5 versions, which means they've also put it into the Frostbite engine. Fun fact, this is only the second time Frostbite has ever appeared on the Nintendo Switch. The other one was Plants vs. Zombies Neighborhood, whatever the heck that game was called. And so, yeah, I'm playing it because, like, from a technical angle, that's a very interesting premise that I was interested in exploring and, you know, kind of seeing how this actually runs. I don't know anything about FIFA. I do know the rules of soccer, so like I can play it, but first impressions, plays well, runs smoothly. It's 30 frames per second, but it hits that the entire time during gameplay. The only time I've seen, I haven't run tests, but like eyeballing it, the only time I've seen frame rate drops is like when it cuts to a replay. There's like a little stutter at the beginning, but then it smooths out. Did count one screen before we started recording, and it came out to a full 1080p, which is kind of nuts. It's totally on anti-aliased, so it's a little crunchy, but like 1080 docked on Switch is kind of just never seen in third-party games these days, even first-party games. It's very, very rare. So cool to see that in a late-gen Switch game. And then that also means I haven't played it in handheld yet, but I'm guessing that handheld is probably 720p, which ought to look really good. And then as far as like the graphics go, I think it probably winds up looking comparable. I looked at some of our old footage of like FIFA 19. It winds up kind of looking similar to that, because obviously they've culled out a lot of the more complex graphical things from this engine. But I think you get, you know, a visually comparable game, but that seems feature complete with the actual current games. I think it looks much nicer than like the 2K sports games that I've seen your footage of, Neil. Those always looked kind of janky to me.
Yeah.
This looks like it's a game. It looks kind of like a late 360 era FIFA game, but it looks like it's supposed to look that way. Like, I feel like a lot of times with Switch games, you know, they get downgraded to the level of a 360 game, but you can tell that they weren't designed to be that way. And so they're still kind of just stuttering and awkward. This one just feels like it looks that way. It's running fine. Like, there's not that obvious, like, oh, this shouldn't be running on this system that we see so often with these ports. So first impressions, once again, I can't tell you if this is a good soccer game, but like from a technical perspective, first impressions are pretty positive.
It's good to hear. Yeah, I'm looking forward to playing more of it. Because it's been, I don't know, the first year of FIFA on Switch was the last time I played a soccer game.
Weird that at this point, with like logically, like there might be one like more
days,
year for this.
Days
like
left. We can count the days.
Suddenly EA is like, you know, I think this Switch thing might be working out. And they're like, yeah, let's put some money in.
We are like, I don't know what, 400 days away at most from the Switch successor. And EA is like, we should give a shit. Can't wait until
next year we're going to get Madden. Yeah.
Yeah, Madden's going to come to Switch next year.
Get 1 year. It'll be like that's the rule ever since Wii U is every Nintendo system. Well, I guess since 3DS, every Nintendo system gets one singular Madden game. So make it count.
Yeah, they're trying with Switch where they're like, we're going to do it the other way around.
Yeah, Wii U we did at the beginning. Switch, let's try it right at the end. But yeah, presumably on the day that this episode comes out, we will also have maybe some coverage on our YouTube channel. We'll see. Should. Yeah, I don't know if that'll be like a traditional review or just like a tech analysis or some sort of weird combo thing or what. But
you'll figure it out.
Maybe there's
you'll
something
be surprised.
There.
We
so
will
go
figure
look.
It out by then.
Yeah, we record on Mondays right now, which is so there's like a long delay between when we record and when the episode comes out. So.
Yeah.
We don't know what's going to happen at the end of the week.
But it is also weird that we're at a point where, I mean, MLB the Show is now, what, in year two? Although I feel like that's a special case, but even still, like, that came to Switch late in the life cycle, too. And the NBA 2K games, starting with last year's one, are basically, like, legacy versions. So it's like, as EA comes back and is like, we're going to try again, NBA 2K has started to not try. And I don't think there's, I think the NBA 2K is the only 2K sport on, because the PGA Tour game that came out a couple years ago that was very good, even if it was funny that there were no crowds on Switch, that sequel, that did not come to Switch. And
yeah,
I actually think I it was a PS Plus game on a PS5. Mm-hmm. And I played a ton of that game on Switch. I started playing it on PS5, and it was just the interface on the PS5 of the new one was horrendous. And I just uninstalled it very quickly. I was like, oh, cool, I can play this. I like the previous one. It did not work for me.
On the comment of interface, I don't know if this has been in any of the previous FIFA games, but I was messing around in the options for FC24. And there appear to be touchscreen controls, as well as the ability to like zoom in and out while playing by pinching and pulling on the touchscreen, which is a weird, once again, it's one of those things where when you're like porting the game, like that's not a feature that would be on the other versions, obviously. So that's something you have to like think to add. I don't know. It feels like there's like a surprising amount of effort put into this, because even when you look at like the MLB The Show, which I think is a pretty good Switch port, especially for a studio that has like no experience porting games to Switch because it's Sony Santa Monica, like this looks and seems to run way better than MLB The Show did, which ran fine, but had that thing I was talking about earlier where like you can tell that it was never designed to run on this. And I haven't really gotten that vibe from FC24 yet. With that, I think we're going to some listener mail, right?
Hell
I didn't
yeah.
write the
Let's
episode
go.
Down in order. Okay. So Adolf Vega writes in and says, when it comes to video game remakes, what is your secret sauce that will get you to rebuy a game? Like, if developers add this secret sauce, it will make it worth buying an old game again. I love Super Mario RPG on the Super Nintendo, but so far I'm not interested in rebuying it on Switch. Obviously, the new RPG looks and sounds better, with analog controls that should make some of the awkward isometric gameplay feel better too. Yet somehow it still hasn't captured my interest to rebuy it. I have a SNES Mini and Virtual Console versions of this game, so I have easy access to it. I bought Metroid Prime multiple times because each release, Switch, Wii, and GameCube, felt and played so different and were better than before. I don't know what, if anything, Nintendo can add to get me to buy the new Mario RPG release. So far, I'm not impressed. In addition to the improved graphics and sound and quality of life improvements, maybe my secret sauce for Mario RPG would be quality voice acting, like the Mario movie cast, and new areas in Rainbow Road, which always felt underdone, would be enough to get me to rebuy it. What about you? So interesting question.
I'm taken by the fact that I don't think those versions of Metroid Prime outside of pointer controls are really that different.
Yeah, I get what he means, though, because like each one does like, so you have the original GameCube game. The original GameCube Metroid Prime controlled kind of bad even at the time that it came out.
Yeah, it was a rigid FPS.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. And then the Wii version made it play like it always should have, but with motion controls. And then the remastered version, beyond being just a technical masterpiece of a game, like honestly, one of the most visually impressive games on the system. It also just, you know, made it control with like normal first person shooter controls, which does make a difference. But you're right. Like they didn't like add any content to the game. But I agree that they did. They felt very different to play as someone who immediately bought all three versions of
that game. No, I mean, like it's no disrespect there, because I'm also like, and it's also, I think, the fact that they were kind of spaced out enough. Where, like, you know, you had, was it 2002, then 2009, then 2023. Like, it's not like it's like, oh, they're remaking it every generation. I mean, I guess they almost have, but the one was at the beginning of a generation, one was in the middle, and another was at the end. So, like, there's a big enough range between them. Whereas, I do feel like it's just that, like, other remakes, and I think the one that I was excited for and I thought was meaningful, and I guess to an extent, I mean, I think it exposes flaws of the original game, but it added enough and was a big enough upgrade that like Link's Awakening on Switch You know, a remake of a Game Boy game. Like, that's one where I felt like there was that secret sauce, as it were. Even if I feel like that game just revealed to me that Link's Awakening's a very basic game that was impressive because it ran on Game Boy.
I will say Link's Awakening was also a weird one for me, because that has the problem that YouTube comments have gotten very angry at me for suggesting that Thousand Year Door may potentially have, in that, like, when I play Link's Awakening, that game runs worse than it did on Game Boy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, just from, like, a gameplay feel perspective, there's a part of me that would still rather play it on Game Boy. I'll be interested to see if Thousand Year Door has that problem with the halved frame rate.
Played through most of it on that janky little Zelda Game & Watch that
Game
came
Watch,
out the other
yeah.
year.
Yeah.
And that's not even the DX version, which I'd never played the, like, complete OG Game Boy version ever.
That's the version I grew up with, so that's, like, I still would kind of rather that. Like, to me, that, like, the black and white one is what I want.
Yeah, like, I mean, the DX, they're both fine. But, like, there's definitely a style of that, like, shines in the uncolorized version.
Yeah.
And I do think with, like, Super Mario RPG, like, because that's one that's called out as one that Adolf Vega is not as into. And honestly, I kind of, as much as I'm excited for that, there's also that little bit of, like, the, oh god, they're actually, Square Enix and Nintendo shook a hand and were like, we're going to do it. Because that felt like it was impossible for this game to be touched again over the years.
Mm-hmm.
I think one thing is that, like, from what they have shown, it looks like it's just a pretty straight remake of that video game. And, like, that it is what it is. They went through it in the most recent direct where they're like, there's boss battles and there's special attacks too. Like, they are scraping the bottom of the barrel for what they're saying, what is brand new about this game other than the visuals, the platform mm-hmm. that it's on. But I also do think that Super Mario RPG actually isn't that accessible. Adolf Vega points out of how, like, I have it on the SNES Mini and Virtual Console, and neither of those are available. Maybe you can find a secondhand SNES Mini. Maybe you can buy a Wii that has it downloaded on it already. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things, right? It's one of those things where it's very easy to emulate, but emulation implies a base level of knowledge that you can't assume everybody has.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do find your suggestion that voice acting would, I can't imagine voice acting in this game. That would be so,
it would be funny if they did just get, like, Pratt and got a Anya Taylor-Joy.
Yeah.
Voicing Toadstool in Super Mario RPG. I think this was one of her last Toadstool appearances.
Oh, sure. Before she became Peach.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would be appropriate to have Jack Black's Bowser in this, because I do think that, like, the Mario RPG, whether it's Mario RPG or Paper Mario or Superstar Saga or whatever, like, that brand of Mario is, like, where that version of Bowser comes from that we saw in the movie. So I do think that, like, Jack Black's Bowser in Mario RPG would play perfectly.
I just, like, want to hear him say Funga foiled again. That's it.
That's what AI is for. There will be an AI mod for Mario
RPG. If that's
RPG
not in the sequel, damn it.
Yeah.
If I have to pay Jack Black on Cameo in 20 years to do it for me, I will.
Yeah.
There's no way he would be even remotely affordable on Cameo right now.
No. I'm trying to think of what I do look for in a... So I guess it's, like, the one thing is, like, I don't want any part of the game to be worse.
I mean, I think I have two examples of that. I don't want it to be worse, but one where I'm like, no, but it's okay. And one where I'm like, damn it, no, you were right. Donkey Kong Country Returns. I don't think there is a perfect version of that game. I will say that 3DS version, at least before we lived in a world where we had a hybrid system, having a Wii game that was only playable on TV be playable on a handheld is very cool, even if I think it's arguable which version of that game is the better version, which I think is already an indictment of a remake if you can't definitively say it's better. And one where I will say, yes, no, you need to make sure it's better is Kirby's Extra Epic Yarn, which I think just like ruins a beautiful game in its port remake or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll even bring it down to, once again, Tales of Symphonia. Yes, it's in HD. You have all the content from like the PS2 version, but you know, you're running at half the frame rate and you've introduced a bunch of fun new glitches.
Well, some of that is I don't know, like
it's the PS2 version, right?
Yeah. That because the GameCube version was the original version, which ran better. PS2 version was crappy, but then that was the foundation that was used for every release.
Yep. And that's, like I said, kind of my concern about Paper Mario Thousand Year Door is that does appear to be running at half the frame rate of the original game, which shouldn't be an issue, but I'm just thinking about those timed button presses that are, some of those can be kind of borderline frame perfect. And so if you go from, you know, I believe I was talking to Matt about this and we were talking about how, like, yeah, if you go from a thing where you have a 3-frame window, depending on how that timing could line up at 30 FPS, you may only have a 1-frame window. In which case you literally would have to be frame perfect with this button press. Yeah. And that can matter. So we'll have to see how they deal with that. Because I do think that game looks beautiful, but like, if that's going to affect gameplay in some way, then I don't, you know, I can do without screen space reflections or whatever if it means that the game runs at the frame rate that it was originally made to run at. So we'll have to see how that one comes out. But yeah, I guess, like, I don't think I need much added to it, to a game. I think my main thing is, like, I want it to look nicer, but still be respect. Like, I get really picky about, like, respecting the original, like, art style and stuff like that. We were talking before we started recording, you brought up the Shadow of the Colossus remake.
Yeah.
And for different reasons, but, like, my one issue with that is that I think the remake has a wildly different art style than the original PS2 game. Not even just that, like, oh, they made the PS2 game look prettier. Like, no, it is a different, like, the PS2 game is like a cel-shaded game and the PS4 game is not. It would be like if you bought a remake of Wind Waker and suddenly it looked like Twilight Princess. Like, that's odd. Still a great game because it's Shadow of the Colossus and it's one of the best games ever made, but like, from a purely remake standpoint, like, I do think you need to be respectful of your original art style. That's why I'll, like, even though something like Skyward Sword is like very straightforward in its remake, the fact that they went, okay, we're gonna clean up and redo a bunch of the texture work but completely in line with how it originally was just to make it sharper, I'm like, great, cool, do that. Like, that's what I want. It's kind of why I fought about not really wanting a super HD version of Mario 64, is that, like, I still maintain that Mario 64 is simple for an N64 game. Like, that was an art design choice the way that game looks, and I don't want a version of it that looks like Mario Odyssey because I think that would ruin the art design of the original. But yeah, so that's my main thing. It's just, I just want to maintain the artistic intent of the original game. And as long as you do that, I don't care that much how much you really add to it. It's something that I think Metroid Prime did very well. Well, we do have one more topic because we're an Xbox podcast. We recorded last week's episode like 10 minutes before Xbox went and just posted everything in their personal lives to the U.S. court's website.
We know everything about Phil Spencer's marriage.
Like, just all of it. So, following the FTC case, a lot of those documents just go public. And so the idea is that they get uploaded, but like, each party goes in and redacts all of the confidential information before it goes up. During the case, the judge made fun of the FTC because they had done that with Sharpies on all of their documents for Sony. But then, like, those, they get scanned, and so, like, a light is shown through them, and so you could totally read through all the Sharpie. So it was Microsoft's turn, and they uploaded this massive PDF of stuff with, like, nothing redacted. J- Just
nope.
Everything was up. So we now know their plans for their next console revision. We know as of like 2020, everything that Bethesda was planning on making for the next like 10 years. We know how much they're paying for Game Pass games.
Or at least how much they estimate.
How much they were estimating. Yeah.
The playtime of Game Pass games.
Just so much that we should not know. And it's now been taken down, but like, why bother? Like, it was in a single PDF. It was very easy to download. So like, that's just out there now. And it's a very interesting leak. The part I don't like, but that, you know, is inevitable, is that their hardware revision for the Series X, not like an upgrade, like not like a pro model or anything, but just their next version of it, is digital only. And assuming they're not going to add a disk drive to the next Series S, that will mean that like both of the primary versions of that system are digital only systems, which from a like game preservation standpoint, bad. Don't like that at all. And even while Xbox has been better than some companies about making old stuff playable, they're still shutting down like the 360 store here soon. Like, yeah, not a fan of that. On the bright side, since it's not an actual upgrade in terms of hardware, I just stick with my Series X, and that's no big deal. But it's
and I will say Phil Spencer did have the retort, and of course he's gonna like deny a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like a lot of this stuff was pulled from like 2020. Like I think it seems like it's tied mostly to when they bought Bethesda, like what was some of their thinking and logic. So I do think there's like, I mean, much like I think at some point there was something called the Switch Pro or along those lines that Nintendo was, you know, prototyping or something, and it just never came out. I'm not saying the new circular router version of Xbox is never going to happen, but there might be differences from what was shown in this leaked stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I mean, you can definitely see that when you look at their lineup of Bethesda games, which A, features, well, it's also a really cool look at how much pandemics can affect your release schedule, because the Bethesda release schedule was from like the beginning of 2020. And it's like, yeah, Starfield will be out by 2022.
Yeah, that stuff's adorable.
Yeah. But like, you have stuff in there that's like, oh, there's going to be a Ghostwire Tokyo sequel. There's not going to be a Ghostwire Tokyo sequel, y'all. But then they also had stuff like, oh, a remaster of Elder Scrolls Oblivion and Fallout 3, which Oblivion, I'm pretty sure those rumors have been public for a while. Like, have heard things about an Oblivion remaster. I think that's happening. Fallout 3, I had heard nothing about a remaster of, so who knows about that? Like, it's crazy. It's probably the biggest leak in video game history. Like, the other good one was that they, in their Game Pass, like, spending estimates thing, you see, like, all of these big names, and then, like, down at the very bottom is little Baldur's Gate 3, which this would have been from when it was, like, barely entering early access, right? Like, super early period. And I think they were estimating like it would be like $5 million to get that on Game Pass day one, which compared to like the rest of the things on this list are like hundreds of millions of dollars. Like, so it was like this cheap little game at the very bottom. And it's just funny to see what realistically is a top three contender for game of the year in 2023 be like at the bottom of that list, very clearly just like that one's probably not a big deal. It's just crazy.
I love the response from the guys from Larian, where they were just like everybody doubted us. No one thought we were going to be this big.
Yeah, I mean, like Larian themselves are kind of a known quantity of like, yeah, they did Divinity 2, people liked that, but it was like pretty niche. And then like the previous Dungeons and Dragons game, Dark Alliance, is awful. So like, there really wasn't a reason to think that that it would be as popular as it is. I will also clarify, because I made this mistake as well, they have a note in that segment where they refer to Baldur's Gate 3 as a second run Stadia game, and that was seen as like them insulting it, but no, at that point Baldur's Gate 3 was planned to launch first on Google Stadia, so literally it would be a second run Stadia game. Just a statement of fact, not an insult to the quality of the game. Stadia wasn't an insult yet at the time this document was from. it is now, but it wasn't then. But yeah, it was crazy leak.
Just trying to see. Yeah, I do like just seeing some of the stuff of Phil Spencer trying to get every From Software game on Game Pass after Elden Ring blew up.
Yep.
All the stuff of scrambling to fill the hole of Starfield in 2022.
Yeah, it's just a crazy, it's a look at the operation of one of these companies that we just would never get normally. And I do think like there, you can't actually draw that many conclusions to it just because of, you know, like Neil said, it's from A several years ago. And so all of these plans have likely changed, but it's still just interesting to see.
Yeah.
An inside look.
I love the strategy. Even if it's also like it's there's also something to be said here of Phil Spencer is not your friend, guys. He might he might be fun theatrics to watch. You know, it does not seem like he is like an absolute shitbag of a businessman.
He seems like a reasonably nice person.
Yeah, but like, at the end of the day, he is a corporate suit for a giant computer company. So like, yes, of course. And it's all the buying Nintendo thing too, where people are like,
he's a monster.
He's a monster for doing this. It's like, no, like, yes, I think anybody at any company ever would be like, you know, it'd be a career move, man, if we bought Nintendo. What if we're Amazon? We are like Bed Bath & Beyond. we are Target. We are, I don't know, what's Joanne Fabrics. If Joanne Fabrics would be like, you know, it'd be great if we bought Nintendo. Put out games? No, we're not gonna put out games. We're just gonna have arts and crafts with Mario and Luigi.
Well, and I do think it's important context for that like in the context of that actual exchange is like, essentially it gets brought up like, oh, could we buy Nintendo? And Spencer makes the comment of like, listen, that would be amazing,
but
we're not gonna be able to buy Nintendo.
It would be so cool. Like, it's
right, everybody, it got reported a lot. It's like, oh, Microsoft wants to buy Nintendo. It's like, no, like a shareholder asked about it, and then Phil Spencer was like, I mean, sure, but never.
And there is the comment there about like, oh, once Nintendo realizes that the value of what they're doing isn't on their own platform, which in a way, Nintendo realized that a movie came out. They do mobile games.
Yep. Like, which I think this email was from before that stuff happened. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it is Nintendo's licensing game has been on a remarkable uptick over the past couple years. I mean, look at stuff like all the Lego things they're doing. Even all like the crossover, like what's they're doing something with a museum for Animal Crossing. There's a Universal theme park, which hey, maybe we'll record an episode live from Super Nintendo World. I'm planning to go there in early November.
Yeah, you looking forward to editing the audio on that, Alex, with just a whole bunch of crowd noise in the background?
Just maybe it's very crowded, but I'm in the Toadstool Cafe.
We're gonna
get a burger with a mushroom stamped on top of it.
I do also there was something very like, what year is it, when I woke up to headlines of like Microsoft wants to buy Nintendo, and I'm like, is it 1999? Like, what again? Because this is not the first time they've that's come up. That was their initial plan for the Xbox, is let's just buy Nintendo. But yeah, I mean, I think all of that ultimately ended with them sort of saying like, yeah, it's better that we just work on improving our relationship with Nintendo than trying to take over Nintendo. Because I do like Microsoft and Nintendo have a very interesting relationship right now where they do not like, I won't say they don't view each other as competitors, because I objectively they are.
Yeah.
You're not playing your Switch and your Xbox at the same time, ergo they compete. But they seem very aware of the fact that they kind of fulfill different niches and are perfectly willing to work together. Right now, it seems like Microsoft's more willing to work with Nintendo than Nintendo's willing to work with Microsoft, but I don't think there are so many N64 games on Rare Replay if Nintendo hadn't gone, yeah, that's okay. I think there were some things in those games that Nintendo had to sign off on, and they were cool with it. I'm very interested to see where that relationship goes. Like, that to me is arguably, that's more interesting than a buyout, is where can these guys go? Both of them would love to outpace Sony. So you get a nice enemy of my enemy is my friend situation. What can these guys do if they were to actually tag team it? And I think that could be very interesting to see. I want Halo on my Switch, damn it. First three games would run just fine. After the next Switch comes out, you could probably run all of them. Honestly, Halo Infinite runs on a base Xbox One. That can probably run on Switch.
I mean, that was always one of the unfulfilled legacy rumors was all the stuff of like Microsoft's going to put games on Switch, and they kind of did.
They did. Then we found, I believe it was during the Apple Epic case, we found out that like Microsoft has tried to get Nintendo to do a Game Pass. Which, like, I get where Nintendo's coming from, but if I were Nintendo and I was going to partner with somebody on putting cloud games on my system, Xbox would have been a much better partner than
Ubisoft.
Yeah. Holy crap, they're horrible. Like, Game Pass is pretty solid. Like, it's not NVIDIA stuff, but Game Pass's cloud streaming is, like, pretty solid.
Yeah, I know you've used it a lot more than me, but it's definitely one of
I honestly use it pretty much every day.
Honestly, Stadia wasn't that bad.
Stadia's problem wasn't the quality of its streaming.
No.
It was the fact that they wanted you to buy games on their ethereal service. Like, whereas with Game Pass, these are games that I'm getting elsewhere and I'm just getting access to play them. Yeah.
I got my free Stadia controller from my cable provider, or I guess my internet, my ISP. And then I proceeded to do the free month of the trial of their Game Pass thing.
Yeah.
And was like, oh, this is actually pretty great. Guess what? This new Panzer Dragoon game or whatever. It's kind of rad.
I will say that as somebody who was pretty critical of cloud for a long time, pretty much every day at work for the past month during my lunch break, I boot up xCloud and play Starfield for half an hour and it runs great. I think in the right context, where you're not buying a non-existent cloud game like on Stadia, I think cloud streaming can be a very useful tool. And I believe we now know that Xbox makes no money off of it. But if anybody can dump money into something that isn't making money, it's Xbox. So hopefully they can keep progressing that and see where it goes, because I think it could be interesting. Well, okay.
Maybe that's an episode. Yeah.
Thank you very much for listening. Send in your listener mail to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. Follow us on the website formerly known as Twitter, at NWR Connectivity, Connectivity NWR, whichever one it is. Maybe we'll make a blue sky at some point. There is a blue sky for Nintendo World Report. I believe it's Nintendo NWR is the username. So if you're on Blue Sky, follow Nintendo World Report on there. Maybe that will be where we go after the apocalypse. We don't know. We're just hedging our bets. I think that's all the stuff. Thanks for joining me, Neil.
Thanks for having me.
Goodbye. This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.